Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Chris. This week on Barbell Shrugged, it's not your typical episode, baby. Get on over to barbellshrugged.com, cue up the video version, get your friends over, make some food, turn on the HDTV, and enjoy the show. But if you are listening to the audio version, we broke this episode into three parts. This is part two of three, where we are in the factory with Eleiko CEO Eric Blomberg, learning just what it takes to manufacture the world's best barbells.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
And we're back at Eleiko offices / manufacturing of the barbell area place.
Factory?
Factory. That would be the way we should say that. We're standing here with the CEO, Eric Blomberg, and we're going to be talking about, We were eating waffles. We talked about waffles. We talked about the history of things.
It was so long ago. Who remembers?
It was at least 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah. We got a little bit into the bars.
We got a little bit. We wanted to talk mostly about the history, but we dug into the technology of the bar and all that prematurely. We got our hands slapped by CTP over here.
He's the one that really runs the show,
yeah,
and then we just get off track.
But now, if you're a meathead, this is one of the geekiest places, most awesome places to be. Look at all this sweetest steel, baby.
So can you tell us a little bit about, the bars did come around, started in 1957. There's been a lot of progression since then. You said slowly innovating over time.
Yep.
It's now 2014, and we're looking at it, and we got to come in here, and we got to see the bars bending,
yep,
and things like that. Can you tell us kind of what sets your bar apart from the others?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about it a little bit this morning, and we made this bar since 1957, and actually, there is a lot more to a barbell than you would think initially. And there are a couple of things that really defines a great barbell. Of course, the steel is important, and the whip of the steel. You have to have the right flexibility in the bar to really support the rhythmic movement in a snatch or a clean.
Do you have the numbers off the top of your head of the tensile strength and the amount of, because that's actually something that's listed. I see when people are selling barbells, if you go online and you look around and people are shopping, like, what's the tensile strength that they should be looking for? What's the amount of whip? Is there like a
yeah? If you mention PSI, it's 215,000 for our competition bars, and that's I think a lot of the bars are around 150, 160, maybe 170,000. So it's really a fantastic type of steel we use.
So what's that mean? Exactly.
It means that you
people don't understand these numbers.
PSI is pound per square inch. It's what it requires to actually break the steel.
Gotcha.
So it's really a top quality steel we use. But you have to find a good mix of. We have a very very hard surface on the steel, but the soft inner, which allows for the flexibility.
So the chrome outer layer, that's very hard.
Yeah, exactly, and also the outer part of the steel.
Okay, yeah.
And that's part of creating the grip of the bar as well. So when you will see the knurling of the bars, you will also understand how difficult it is to work in this type of steel. And you, for the really professional athletes, you need to have a really great grip. Mm-hmm. Not too sharp. We should not tear your hands apart, but you have to have you should not allow for any type of slipping in.
The knurling is interesting because
Before the knurling, when you're doing the knurling, is that part of the hardening process?
No. That's done before.
Okay.
So the knurling is just how you work in the material.
And you were talking about yesterday how to make the imprint,
yeah,
the knurling. You don't cut the steel, you press the steel.
Exactly.
So you're pressing the knurling into the steel.
Yeah.
And you're talking about how hard the steel is. So like you kind of go through a lot of tools.
Yeah, exactly.
How many with those little circle things you said you go through, like seven?
Roughly seven. Yeah, seven.
So you make seven bars, and then you have to start replacing
yeah,
the tool.
Exactly. So it's very, and those are very expensive. So it's It's of course you would like to push it more, but we need to really stay true to what we want to have in the final product. So we need
right.
to have a really.
You'd like to get more out of it, but
absolutely
for cost reasons. But you're not going to sacrifice.
That's another reason. People need to understand the cost of the barbell. This is one of the reasons. Like, to get the knurling perfect, you need a certain kind of tool. These little gear-like teeth that basically eat into the barbell and kind of displace this hard steel.
Yeah.
But to do that in a way that leads to superior performance and grip, you need a better thing, and that's going to add the cost. So, like, the every step of this way, this craftsmanship goes into just the final feel.
Yeah.
The way that feel is incredible.
The feel is incredible. And we actually talk about the Eleiko feeling, and the lifters talk about the Eleiko feeling. And it's really a combination of the grip, the flexibility of the bar, and also the smoothness of the sleeves, how they rotate.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to lose, have anything impacting your lift.
And we were talking about the surface a lot, and I think we have footage of the kind of the surface.
Yep.
And hopefully
CTB got that shot.
I was handed a microscope or a magnifying glass or whatever, and we got to place it on the bar and look at it, and we were looking through it, and it was like looking at a diamond. It was totally unexpected. I'm like,
yeah, you think they're just little spikes, right?
What's his name? He pulled out the microscope.
Sander.
Yeah. He's responsible for
he's responsible for the knurling and the grip.
What they looked like to me was like little like fancy hunting arrows. Like the tips were so like fractal,
all overlapped,
all overlapping and incredibly intricate. You would have thought that it would just be little spikes, like little simple things. I never would have dreamed. I've seen a lot of barbells and usually it's just lines of some kind of pattern.
I thought it was just gonna be a little crisscross pattern like that. Like,
but no, it's
not like that at all.
We got it under the microscope, and
it's elaborate.
Shocking how how elaborate it was.
It's
like
elaborate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty incredible. I never thought. Let's inspect this with a microscope.
Yeah.
And I think people need to understand, like, this is a weightlifting bar. That bar is designed for you to be able to put a limit load overhead, right?
Yep.
And the whip and all that's designed. But it's interesting how a lot of people complain, oh, this bar is sharp. Well, you can easily just sort of grade down the knurling, which will be more suitable for many, many repetitions, like in a fitness or CrossFit setting, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we have a range of bars as well. So the weightlifting competition bars, those are of course the sharpest ones.
So sometimes
in terms of grip.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a Leco barbell in your gym, there's always going to be like a little bit of jealousy of who uses it, whatever. But you got to keep in mind, like, you got to be very careful in the barbell you select for the job.
Yeah, exactly.
You need a specific barbell if you can.
The training bars are a bit more caring for the hands, and then if you look at our sport training and our XF bars, they have a much softer grip because you do more repetitions and also because they're used by people who are not professional athletes and who are used to lifting every morning, every evening.
So if you have softer hands, you might want to use the
flight wave, calling them babies.
Yeah.
So if you're choosing between the two, the competition bars are sharper and they're going to beat your hands up more. So really, you should save the competition bars for competing and
the training bar
for training.
Exactly.
And you shouldn't go, I want the nice one, so I'm going to buy the competition one for training. Yeah. It's going to beat you up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's really when you want to go for personal records and win competitions.
Mm-hmm. And, only when you want to win.
Only when you want to win.
Winning's what you're interested in.
Just never. So Mike was talking about how you press that instrument into the bar to get the knurling, but you don't actually remove any material. You're not scoring it and removing material.
No, exactly. So we don't take off any material.
And if you did, it would create some type of a break point. Like if you score a bar, I've seen this with cheaper bars where instead of having the little hash marks, they just score a line in the bar and that creates a break point. I remember at one time I saw a guy, he had 315 pounds on the bar and he was doing a hang clean and he went down like that and he went to bounce the weight and it just broke right at one of those score points and he broke his wrist and he was strapped in and it was a bad situation. But something like that wouldn't happen with a bar like this because you don't have those points where the bar is scored and material's been removed.
No, exactly. Hmm. It's just a more efficient process as well when you want to create this type of grip and this type of pattern.
And the not just the surface of the knurling, but we had the surface of the you started getting into that a little bit, the surface of the collar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's and also if you look at our collars on all of the bars, there's a type of ribbing as well on them.
Yeah.
And it has a functional aspect, of course, because it takes away a little bit. It gives us more friction, So it holds them on a little bit more. But it's also because it's a nice feeling.
You throw when the you collar on, it'll lock on. Yeah, you talk about the saline.
You say it sings.
It sings, exactly.
I never thought about that.
It sings. So it's a beautiful sound when you put the weights on. And you can the faster you do it, the more they sing.
Oh yeah, I like to get on there and just kind of like whip the weight on and
exactly.
You can feel it and you can.
You know, and that's one of the small little details I'd say that you can feel as an experienced lifter. If that weight is a little bit more stable, a little tighter, when you go to do quick rapid movements, that stability is going to translate for you. You'll be able to feel that, even if it's subtle. You'll be able to feel that, I think.
It's also help keep on the smaller weights that are outside the collars. You know, like the 1 kilo, the 2 kilo.
Yeah, the friction
plates.
The friction plate, the small friction plates. Yeah, exactly.
Do you guys used to have problems with that where they were outside the collars and they would slide off until you made any adjustments? Was that ever a problem?
We haven't seen that with the friction plate once. No, but then it's happened that they put just a typical small discs on, and then they can slide off. Mm. But if you use the friction grip plates, then it's
got like the rubber inside.
Yeah, exactly, because they have the.
No, they don't go anywhere. No.
So you guys always call them discs. You call them plates or bumpers, or is disc
plates,
what you
bumpers,
normally say?
Discs is usually what we say. Yeah.
Okay, is that a Swedish thing, or is that just like what the weightlifting community tends to call them? Or is that like a your thing?
Well, that's a good question. I know in the U.S. it's often called bumpers.
And yeah, they just call them bumpers in the U.S.
So, but we tend to. I think sometimes we do mix, but the discs is what we've named.
This sounds classier, doesn't it?
Gotcha. Can you walk us through the process of the manufacture of the barbell from when you get the steel and like maybe kind of where you get the steel to like it arrives at the doorstep?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've used a type of steel for many years, which we are extremely pleased with. We get that from a steel mill in the northern part of Sweden.
And this is a proprietary steel, right?
Yeah.
It's not like anybody else can just take the steel and make a barbell with it.
No, that's for us. When we get it here, the first thing we do is to do the knurling of the grip, and that's what you will see out with the sander doing. Then it moves on to the surface treatment facility, which is just nearby. And it gets a chrome surface on it. Also, there it's important to get the right type of process when that is made.
Oh yeah,
because sometimes you can see chrome falling off or even being shaved off.
Yeah, and you don't want it to be a laminate surface where there's a layer upon a layer. It's got to be bound in a transition zone between the materials, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
A strong bond.
Is that just to make it look shinier and look more appealing, or
it protects the bar as well.
So it doesn't rust and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's also what we test in the bending machine as well, just to make sure that the chrome stays on and it really returns to.
Well, I guess there's a time where you tried that a few times or a dozen times or a million times and the chrome did not stick the way you wanted it. I mean, how much tinkering goes into making, because this is a finished product. This is an evolved tool, like we said.
Yeah.
How much screw ups go into this, or has there ever been a key mistake you've made?
No, I mean it's just a gradual improvement process.
Yeah.
You do something and then you find out that this was not the perfect way of doing it. And it can be small things. You adjust just a little bit how you. I mean, we don't chrome the whole part of the bar where the color is on. That's not a chromed area.
So I like to hear the whole rest of Mike's question. Like you start off, you put on the knurling, you chrome it, and then what's the rest of that process look like?
After that, we get it back here to the assembly line, and we put the sleeves on. We calibrate it. We got all the bearings in place.
Calibrate as in you're making sure it's the right specific weight.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you take a competition bar a man's 20 kilo, mm-hmm. that cannot weigh more than 20,020 grams. But we usually place them around 20,006-7 grams.
That's a lot of precision.
And you were saying you'd like to go. You never want to go under.
But we never want to go under because it's just. I mean, as per the regulations, you're allowed to go just a couple of grams under. But it's just a principle of if someone beats a world record, they should know that it's never less than
attention to detail things.
Yeah, so that's very precise compared to many other weights on the market. Like we've taken weights that we have, like a 45-pound plate, yeah, and weighed it, and it might be 48, it might be 42. It's 45.
We're talking 3 or 4 pounds difference.
Yeah, yeah, that's a huge margin compared to a couple of grams, like you're talking about. 6 grams is nothing. Yeah.
No, exactly.
It's like a feather.
And that's because we sell so much to the professional market, and that's the demands there are very, very high. Mm-hmm.
So if someone buys Elite equipment, they can be very sure that 25 kilos is very, very, very close to 25 kilos.
Yeah.
Now, so you get the chrome applied. What's the next step after that?
Well, that's when we get it back. We actually do a process where we make sure that the bar is absolutely straight. So we straighten the bar in our bending machine, and just make sure that this is a perfectly straight bar. And that after that process, it goes to the assembly unit that you see behind you, where the sleeves are assembled. And also
you can tell these guys have done that job once or twice.
Yeah, they know the importance as well of making sure that every bar really lives up to the Eleiko standard.
How are the collar or the sleeves made?
The sleeves. Well, we make the sleeves here as well. So we and that's where you get this type of pattern that we talked about. But then what you do when you assemble it, you put the bearings in. And in the competition bars, we use 10 needle bearings. Just to make sure that they will spin smoothly and for a very, very long time.
So you said there's 10 bearings. How much force can each one tolerate?
Ooh, I think we went through the numbers. I think it was 2,000 kilos.
For each of the little tiny 10 bearings inside each of the collars. I found that to be the most impressive number I heard. Like, you're not going to harm that bearing. I guess, like you said, it can even get better and better with time.
Yeah,
like
exactly. I mean, the smoothness can get better with time.
Mm.
But you should not be of the grease or the oil.
Yeah, exactly. It's because it spreads and it evens out. So usually the best spinning and the smoothest spinning bars are the ones who have just a year or two on.
I guess the other right. funny thing is you never have to take that collar off for maintenance, do you? That's not recommended.
No, it's not recommended. It should work.
So I know that from personal experience. I remember getting the Eleiko bar a couple years ago and going, I thought it would spin better.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had like a conversation. I was like, well, maybe you just got to break it in. And now, now it spins.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastically.
Yeah,
so
that's probably a good example.
The case. Yeah.
They're spreading out the lubricant, right?
So what kind of maintenance or upkeep do you need to do with a bar? Is there much required?
Yeah,
I mean, they come with a brush at a minimum.
Yeah, they come with a brush, so you can take off magnesia from the grip, mm-hmm, and any other stuff that might get stuck.
Chalk, blood.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Broken egos, whatever happens to be stuck in the knurling.
So you get these guys apply the sleeves. They get the sleeves on there. They lock them in.
Yeah.
And then they throw the little Eleiko sticker
as well.
I don't know if that's a sticker. It's a hard plastic
cap
thing with
cap. Yeah, like the cap and the posters.
Ears there. So, and then is it ready to go ship at that point?
Yeah, then it's ready.
Yeah,
to
look
go.
At that. There's a finished product.
Yeah,
we saw a stack of those in the in your warehouse with the brush included and everything.
You guys just got a new warehouse.
Lustfully looking at this warehouse, by the way.
Yeah,
these piles and piles.
One of our guys grabbed one of those new dumbbells that spin.
Yep.
The handle spins. He's shoving it under.
Though, you made a great point about that, right? Like, why not? Out. Why doesn't everything need to spin? Like, if it's good for one thing, why is it not good for the other?
Yeah, it's just assumed that barbells need to spin and spin beautifully, but dumbbells are locked, and it just never occurred to anyone to make the dumbbell spin just like the barbells. That seems rather weird to me, that it just never really came to be until you guys are more or less the first people to do that. Is that correct?
It's been around, mm-hmm, but it's great to have when you want to do like snatches with a dumbbell.
Well, I prefer the kettlebell.
It feels so much better.
It's better than a kettlebell.
Were you guys making it before the grid league, or you started making it?
We were making it before, yeah. But it's being used in the grid league, yeah.
When you use it, I wasn't like that's had a 12-kilo dumbbell, and it's surprising. If you just do a curl and a snatch, much more smooth range of motion, much more smooth mechanics of that load.
Yeah.
It made a big difference.
I mean, I knew it was going to feel different, but the actual difference. I was like,
nice
I could work with this. I feel safer. No, anything that turns in your hand when you're overhead doesn't feel good.
Yeah, because
I was in a gym this summer where I was on, like, really rusty bars.
Yeah.
And I actually like training on bad bars on occasion.
Yeah.
Like,
just gave him douche chills.
Tommy Kona, he talks about in his book, like, you know, like, he didn't have, like, a decent barbell for a long time. He ended up being a really good weightlifter.
Yeah.
I think it's good to, like, do that. Now, when you do it, you got to be careful because your risk of injury skyrockets at that point.
Yeah, it does.
And so you got to go. So when I did it, I was like, okay, when it starts feeling dangerous at all, I'm just going to stop there.
Yeah.
And I did. I had to, like, stop, like, 30 kilos short of where I would normally work with overhead work. I was doing some snatches.
Yeah.
It's cool to use shitty bars, but once you get used to the nice ones, it's hard to go back.
It's tough, man. It is tough.
It's good to try every now and then
it was one of those things where I was getting overhead and I had to stop. I was like, my ego wanted to go heavier.
Yeah. What, didn't you learn a lesson about bars that don't spin well when you go to a meet where there's a nice bar? Like, in the honor class, and you drop a bar on your head?
Oh, yeah, I did
drop a bar on my head. in the back room, we were warming up with bars that were, like, so slow. And then the actual bar that was on the platform was a very nice bar, and it spun very well.
Yeah.
And I went out there to do my jerk, and for the first time ever, like, I popped it up, and then it kind of spun this way, which had never really happened to me before. And then I tried to correct, and it spun way too fast the other way too, and I dropped it right on my head, and it kind of skipped forward. It's on YouTube if you want to go watch it.
That's a scary one.
I will put Doug Larson weightlifting miss or something like
that.
That's
going in the show notes, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll show that video.
Link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Link the one where I went out there and got it 2 minutes later, though.
I will. I'll make sure you're very favorably presented, Doug. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's good to have consistency, especially within your training session.
That's a lesson for gym or meet operators too. Like, if you can, it's nice if you. Sorry, I jumped all over.
He just cut you off verbally. He was like, "No,
Michael,
just, like, put his hand in front of you.
I want you to know that I'm very sorry."
And you know what? I'm never gonna stop making fun of you.
I don't expect you to. We're just saying that people should point. Keep in mind, if you're gonna run a meet like that, it'd be really nice if you could use consistent equipment, because that kind of stuff can happen. People can get hurt.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, like I was saying, like, I had to go way, you know, that was just to get a session in that day. It would be a lot harder to progress in strength on not great equipment on a regular basis.
I think I'm a bit spoiled because I tend to train with the Leico bars.
I'm sure you do.
you think you can get your hand on a few of them, can you?
Yeah, but. But there are actually bigger differences usually than people think between bars, and especially the spin, and also that you don't want to lose the grips.
It's just like anything. So it's always more complicated and more
than you
there's
think,
more
yeah.
to it than you think there
yeah,
is.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Remember one time we had one of our bars rust because our cleaning crew came in and got them all wet or something like that, and we came in and I put a bar on the ground, and I didn't think that it wouldn't spin. It didn't occur to me because it spun every day until right now.
Yeah.
And then I went to try to do, like, a warm-up clean of, like, 95 pounds, and I just grabbed it and went to pull, and it didn't spin at all. And I went like this and was like, whoa. I did not expect that. Like, when a bar doesn't spin, it's so much different. It's almost impossible to lift at all because you have to do
a strongman clean. You have to do a continental-style clean where you inch it up vertically up your body until you can pop it and catch it. You can't do a smooth clean.
Yeah. I all of a sudden had, like, an instant appreciation for what a good bar feels like, because I was like, whoa, that's the other end of the spectrum, and these feel amazing.
That being said, if you want a PR,
exactly.
That's what the bars are for, PRing.
Exactly.
I know most people hate hitting PRs, but sometimes it's necessary.
It's fun.
All right, I think we're gonna wrap this up. I think we kind of covered a lot of the manufacturing process. Is there anything we want to talk about? Maybe with the rubber?
We didn't mention
the
rubber.
We didn't talk anything about the plates.
Discs.
Because the bars are very precise in how much they weigh, like down to, you know, very few grams. And then it's actually interesting. You guys are weighing the bars, and then you're having to weigh the sleeve separately, and you're having to match them up. So if a bar is a little light, you put a little bit heavier sleeve on there, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's right.
So you kind of make it, so you got everything organized in such a way.
Yeah.
So you got the bars down to a science on the weight, but then the bumpers too. And Doug was talking about earlier. I remember at University of Memphis, they actually had to weigh all the plates, and we kind of knew that they were how much difference they were because they were doing like research.
Yeah,
you gotta like be very precise about what you're actually doing, and that's why they had the actual weight written on there. And these are down to just a few grams as well.
It's the same tolerance on these ones. So the one this table. 25 kilos can weigh maximum 20,025 grams as well.
That's so precise.
And so some of your manufacturing of the plates or the discs is proprietary. Some of it's kind of a secret, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, also with the discs, you want to get the right composition of the rubber, of course, because you want to find a good enough bounce. You don't want it to bounce too much,
right.
But you also don't just want everything to go into all of the force to go into the bar.
I've definitely used plates, you know, bars, yeah. And you know, plates that have too much bounce.
Yeah,
and it's almost like. It's almost dangerous sometimes. Like,
it can come up hit you in the face sometimes.
I actually had a gym member break his finger.
Oh, yeah?
A bar bounced back, and he was trying to settle it.
He was
trying to rush a lift and end up breaking his finger.
Or it'll jump into your shins. It'll jump into somebody else's platform or something.
You guys have this down like what? Like two bounces. Like you kind of like. Well, now, and it has to do with the platform too.
The platform is important. So if you looked at the world championship, it really just fell and landed on the platform on a two bounces, and it was just a nice. But then it's a platform. It's a competition, Olympic competition platform with like fully. Full oak beams. It's a fantastic. It's like a living room flooring.
Yeah, I think some people like to have the bounce, like it's bouncing like a basketball. That's
yeah.
But not we should
what
probably
you
clear that up. That's not what you want. It may feel cool that your weights bounce really high, but
yeah,
I guess better call it a disc for that reason. Bumper is not. You don't want it like bumpy and bouncy. That's not the wrong cue.
You don't want it to die on the ground either.
No, you don't want it to
die. Right balance.
Exactly. A controlled landing.
Yeah. What I love about these is that. I guess I learned a lot of the load comes from the center hub, right?
Yeah.
Like, how much was it? At least half of the load, or a little more?
It's roughly
that?
half of the weight is in the hub, and half is the rubber.
Yeah, and these are glued and screwed together.
Yep.
Wow.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I've used a lot of plates and a lot of bumpers just fine, but these might be the only ones I've ever felt where you pick it up and drop it a million times, and this does not rattle. This does not shake around. This does not come loose at all.
No, it has to stay really close.
What do you need to actually get that apart? Do you ever need to get these apart for servicing or anything, or can I ever even be separated?
Well, you can of course separate it, but it's not something we recommend at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So they should also stay like that.
So these fit really snugly.
They clamp together and squeeze.
Well.
There's
a snug. It's a snug fit.
Yeah, exactly.
On the bar.
That's also important because that's also a part of the whole feeling of the lift. You don't want it to be like
slack.
A distance to travel before you.
Right.
Before you start to lift the weight.
And this is also continually getting better. So continually innovating
the
bumper plate or the disc.
And exactly. And we're working really to understand what constitutes the perfect disc as well.
Just
so we're
like
working
the
on some
bell.
interesting projects there.
What do you think makes a perfect disc?
One thing it says illegal.
Exactly. it does have to look beautiful as well because it's part of it's part of creating a good lifting experience. It has to be inspirational to go to your
love that
to your area for lifting. So it's a big part also.
So all these details make a difference, right? So if you think. Even the act of like, here's a barbell that's a little heavy. Let's pair it with a collar that's a little light. We're not talking like a significant. We're talking like grams, like tiny grams. It'd be so easy for you to say, you know what, that doesn't matter. No one will feel that.
Yep.
Let's just keep this an efficient process and walk them all the way through really quickly. The attention to detail to mix and match to get as close as possible. The attention to developing these discs, which seem to have evolved in a way right alongside the barbell. Because if you look at Alico plates from the 80s or so, they're obviously radically different.
Yeah.
No, but those are still around. They're still fantastic. But this is. This is a lot of years of tinkering. I mean, 50 years of tinkering to get subtle additions to the outer surface to improve the grip, to learn that you need to glue and screw this like how you would construct a house that's going to last. I mean, that's a principle that carries this as anything else. And then, of course, it's got to look good, too, to meet that Swedish design ethos. Like, it doesn't matter if it's hideous, what does all this craftsmanship matter? I mean, the pairing is what makes this powerful.
That's the point.
Yeah,
that's
I love
a good point. I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All those things are important. And then
should make that the summary of the show.
Yeah.
I guess I will. Yeah. Yeah. Good job, me.
So we've gone through many bumper plates at our gym in Memphis. You know, they crack, they break, the centers come out.
Yep.
And the plates that I grew up on that I explained earlier, they're 30 years old and none of them are cracked and none of the centers have come out yet. Like how is this different than some of the plates that we might be using that are breaking on us?
Yeah. No, I think. I mean, it's all those small things that you mentioned that has sort of developed over the years, and also just the whole construction of the hub and how you fit it to the rubber, that matters as well. So it's just I think we're at a good point now where these are really really long lasting discs. And that's where we want to be.
Right. I mean, being a premium product, this is going to be more expensive than the plates that I was talking about.
Yeah.
But if I have to replace those other discs 4 or 5 times in 10 or 15 years, then this eventually comes out ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're thinking long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's real. I mean, our products, and from a commercial point of view, of course, it's not ideal that they last for 40 years like some of the bars do. But it's just part of the culture. We want to make products that really can last a lifetime, because it's just part of the DNA of the company and the brand. It's quality, and they should really not break.
That was something I kind of want to touch on. We talked a lot about it before the podcast, before we started like doing the interview. And so like sometimes when we start talking about something before the interview with the mics off, we forget to mention it when we're on. And that is like kind of the company culture.
Yeah.
And that was one of those things. That was something I did not anticipate to be impressed by when I showed up. I was like, I'm going to be really impressed by the barbell, the manufacturing process, which I was. But then when we got to meet a lot of the people in the company, kind of gave us a presentation yesterday. Was it yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday.
The whole jet lag thing is throwing us all
off. It was vicious.
We're like, was it last week? Was it yesterday? I don't know.
Time travel.
Yeah. So I was really impressed by that. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about the company culture? And then you actually did a really good job of, you know, showing us visually and verbally that was.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think. I mean, what we have an overall vision within the company to really work to create a stronger world, and of course, so that's why these things, such as to celebrate strength that I mentioned before, is such an important thing of what we do. We really want to promote strength training in people's lives, and really want to also promote this type of strength training, the lifting, and then so. That's really present in everything we do. And then we have a couple of other values, important areas that we really care about. And one thing is just this constant pursuit for quality, mm-hmm. for outstanding quality. And that's partly what mm-hmm. we've discussed here with the bars and the discs. And it has to be in everybody. Everyone in the company has to have that as a guiding star the whole time, that we want to pursue and achieve outstanding quality. Other things are just the winning mentality, the strive to win. That's also a big part of who we are. We sell to professional athletes who want to beat records, win Olympic gold medals. So we need to understand that. But we also want to, of course, win ourselves as a company and as a team. Other things that are important within the company is this improvement process of, and we call it to keep learning. And that has to do with product development, innovation, new technology, new materials, education, which we talked about in during the breakfast.
And we're gonna get more into the educational piece.
Exactly, that's the next stuff. You'll meet Anders, mm-hmm. who's our head coach, mm-hmm. And that's a really big part of what we do as well. The last area, which is also extremely important, is this whole. We call it to nurture kindness.
Yeah.
And it has to do with
so great, man.
With all the relationships that we build within the company and with all the people who come here and that we interact with. It has to be an objective for everyone to really build long lasting and genuine and honest and fun relationships.
Yeah.
With the people we meet, customers, suppliers. Mm. You guys and
by the way,
colleagues.
If you have a chance to do anything with Aleco, I would recommend it. It's been an extremely positive experience. And like I already said, I expected we'll see the manufacturing process. But hanging out here has been fantastic.
Yeah.
And right now you have some classes going on, a course out in the training area. So if you had a chance.
Yeah, we have a Aleco strength coach going on at the moment.
Yeah.
So you'll see bits and pieces of that. And Christmas is there now, working out as well.
That's right.
So, she was on edge, man. She had to get in there listening to Barbell. She was losing her mind.
Yeah, you could really see it. Yeah.
Yeah, she's gone a few days without touching any weights. Yeah, she was getting a little stir crazy. Exactly. Let's wrap this up, and then what we'll do is next we'll move into the education piece, and we're going to get a chance to talk to Anders, who's in charge of all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Excellent. And thanks for joining us, and thanks for having us out.
Really thank you very much.
Yeah.
This is Andrea Ager, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Barbell Shrugged is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrugged.com and sign up for the newsletter.